Welcome to Classical 95.9 WCRI's Conducting Conversations with your host, Mike Maino. 1 hour of music and conversation with notable people in the arts, bringing you the stories of how music has impacted their lives. The show will give a behind-the-scenes look at the guest's background, interests, or special project.
Conducting Conversations is brought to you by Roberts Musical Instruments, from sheet music and brand name instruments to rentals, repairs, lessons, and more. Roberts Musical Instruments is your key to musical success. Call 823-5459. That's 823-5459.
And now here's your host, Mike Maino.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Conducting Conversations. Tonight we have a brand new group to Conducting Conversations. This is the Connecticut Gilbert and Sullivan Society, and here representing the group is the musical director, John Dreslin. Welcome, John.
Well, thank you for having me, Mike.
It's nice to have you with us. I'm going to read a little something about John, because it's pretty impressive, actually. You have a long list of credentials. He is not only the director of the Gilbert and Sullivan Society, this is his 28th season with that group. 25 of them as the music director. He has participated in over 110 productions across Connecticut as a conductor, accompanist, director, and so forth, or an actor in various genres of musical theater, from opera to Broadway musicals, winner of 9 Eugene O'Neill Awards, and a Lifetime Achievement Award from Connecticut Gilbert and Sullivan Society. He is also a recognized scholar and lecturer on Gilbert and Sullivan. He has been the organist at the Union Baptist Church in Mystic for the last 24 years. He is retired as a dentist and lives in Stonington, Connecticut. John, that's a long list of things to be very proud of. That's quite a deal.
Yes, I've sort of kept two parallel careers for a long time, as a dentist and as a musician.
Mm-hmm. And you've been retired from dentistry for how long?
I retired at the end of 2011. So,
just a couple of years now of getting, yes, starting to get into the flow of it.
Yes, my life slowed down a little bit.
Although I'm sure you keep very busy with this organization, the Connecticut Gilbert and Sullivan Society. And as you explained to me before we went on the air, it's not Gilbert O'Sullivan, right?
No. That's a completely different genre.
You don't even know him. You never met the man. But but Gilbert and Sullivan Society, what caused you to get involved with this so many years ago?
Well, as a matter of fact, I started my interest in Gilbert and Sullivan when I was a young child. When I was still in elementary school, I got a book out of the library of a reduced version of Easy Piano Pieces from HMS Pinafore, one of their well-known operators. When I was in the 9th grade, I actually participated in my first Gilbert and Sullivan production as accompanist for Pirates of Penzance, for our school production. And when I eventually moved to Connecticut, I found out that there was a local Gilbert and Sullivan group going, and I started out with them as an accompanist, and after a few years, I ascended to become a music director.
All right. Yeah. Well, there's a little, we might have a little problem here. You said when you moved to Connecticut, that where did you come from?
I grew up in New York City.
Oh, all right. We have to stop right here. This is a show only for New Englanders.
My father actually was a musician. I like to say I grew up in the pits, because he was a drummer for many Broadway shows. And at that point, it was the orchestras were not, they weren't amplified. That's the word I was looking for.
All right.
And so it was very loud down in the pit. I mean, he would sit me next to his drums. He was a drummer, and I would sort of leave with a headache.
All right, I guess we'll let you in. You've been in Connecticut for quite a few years, so you're okay. Yeah. That's a good thing. We're going to talk a lot about the society and the organization as such, but we do want to get to some music. And the reason that you're on at this point is to talk about a program that's going to be coming up on October 3rd and 4th. Tell us about the presentation.
Okay, we're going to do this year by an opera called Iolanthe. by Gilbert and Sullivan. And that's going to occur at the Valley Regional High School in Deep River, Connecticut, on October 3rd at 2 o'clock p.m. and 7:30 p.m. And then the next day, Sunday, October 4th, at 2 p.m. So we'll be doing two matinees and one evening. The evening will be on Saturday, matinees on Saturday and Sunday. For information or tickets, you can call 860-554-1256, or you can check out our website, which is ConnecticutGNS.org, but it's spelled out as CTGANDS.org.
All right, that's a little, make sure we get that. It's CT and then GANDS. org.
That's correct.
So it's all kind of an abbreviated website, which is great. Keeps it short.
And on that website, you'll be able to see pictures and some also some videos from our past productions to see what kind of quality we produce.
We have some cuts that we're going to be playing throughout the program of this performance by someone else. But before we get to them, we want to play some of your own music from the organization that you're the director of. What do you have for us first?
Well, we're going to start out with a pretty well-known trio from one of their most popular works, HMS Pinafore, and it's called Never Mind Why and Wherefore. And this is from our production that we did in 2012.
All right, we'll give it a listen right now.
Why and wherefore love can level ranks, and therefore, though his lordship stations mighty, though stupendous be his brain, though her tastes are mean and flighty, and her fortunes poor and plain. Ring the merry bells and lordship, blend ye with roaring wild, for the union of his lordship with a humble captain's child, for a humble captain's daughter,
what a gallant captain's daughter,
and a lord who knows the water,
and a tar who plows the quarter.
Let the air with joy be laden, and the songs the air above, for the union of a maiden with a man who loves her love.
Never mind the why and wherefore, love can tell the ranks, and therefore, though your naughty congregation in my set could scarcely pop, though you occupy a station in the lower middle class.
Ring the merry bells on board ship, blend the air with warbling wild, for the union of his lordship with a humble captain's child, for a humble captain's daughter,
for a gallant captain's daughter,
and the lord who knows the water,
and the tar who plows the water.
Let the air with joy be laden, blend the songs the air above, for the union of a maiden with a man who loves her love.
Mentioned in your introduction that you were a scholar of Gilbert and Sullivan, so let's find out a little bit about who they actually were.
Okay, well, we can almost say that they invented the popular musical theater as we now know it. They perform wrote between them 14 operettas. By the way, they referred to them as operas, not operettas, between the years 1871 and 1896. Probably the best well-known of them are the HMS Pinafore. We just heard a little excerpt from that. The Pirates of Penzance, which has been turned into a Broadway production and also a movie. And also the Mikado. Those are the three best-known ones.
Those are definitely the three I've heard of, right?
Yeah. Those are the ones that most everybody has heard of, but I don't even think they're necessarily their best work. Some of these other ones are of extremely high quality, and Iolanthe certainly is among one of the best. It's very tuneful. It's very funny. Mm. Now, William Gilbert was the one who wrote the book in lyrics. And he started out as a lawyer, but he quit the law. It was too dull for him, and he became first a writer of humorous pieces for popular magazines in London, and then he became a playwright and a director, and he pretty much invented the art of stage direction as it's practiced in modern times. There was a movie a couple years ago called Topsy Turvy that has a scene of him directing Mikado, and you can see what his methods were that he basically invented. Before him, actors pretty much made up their own what we call blocking. They made up their own movements and such, but he regimented them so that it was reproduced exactly every time. Now, the composer was Arthur Sullivan, and at the time, he was the preeminent composer of serious music in England, and he wrote one symphony, a cello concerto, which is very good, a grand opera, Ivanhoe, and a whole host of orchestral and choral works, including several hymns that are still commonly sung in churches. It's probably the most famous one is Onward Christian Soldiers. That was a Sullivan hymn. So during their lifetimes, they were both quite successful and well-known in their individual fields, but it's their joint work that has lived on after them. It is often said that the sun never sets on Gilbert and Sullivan. Their works continue to be performed by both amateur and professional groups around the globe, mostly, but not exclusively, in English-speaking countries. I once heard a recording of Mikado done in German, which was quite different, and I have heard that Mikado has been done in Japanese as well, which I'd love to hear. And a friend of mine also made several versions of Gilbert Sullivan in Yiddish.
Wow. Well, that should be interesting. Well, we have, moving back to the group, your group, you have one more recording of a live piece. Tell us about this next one.
Okay, once again, this is an excerpt from our 2012 production of HMS Pinafore, and we have Catherine Bowden singing the aria, The Hours Creep On Apace, where she has to decide whether she wants to give up her life of luxury to marry a common sailor in the English Navy.
Dingy room in some back street with stuffy children crying. where organs yell and clacking housewives fume and clothes are hanging out all day and drying, with one cracked looking glass to see your face in and dinner served up in a pudding basin.
John, that's a little bit higher note than I would have attempted. That's really up there. It's quite impressive. Wonderful when you have those kind of voices available to you. Let's get a little background on your group specifically.
Okay. Connecticut Gilbert and Sullivan Society was founded in 1980. So we're now in our 35th season. And the group, of course, is devoted to preserve and promote the works of Gilbert and Sullivan. We present one major production a year. And the actors are all volunteers from the community, some of whom travel quite long distances to participate. Many of our performances are graduates of distinguished music schools and conservatories and extremely accomplished, as you heard. Catherine was a great example of that. And we hold auditions in the late spring and rehearse over the entire summer, one evening a week for the full cast and the second evening for those who have been chosen to play principal parts. We're always eager to welcome some new talent and encourage complete family participation. We have a lot of fun, and it's good family entertainment. So over the years, we've had many families that have participated, mother and father, some of their children. We have one little girl incorporated in our cast this year who's going to be a solo dancer. I think she's only about 6 years old.
Wow.
And so we have a lot of fun doing it, as well as the joy of creating something really nice. We present our show every autumn, usually the first weekend in October, and this schedule allows us to include many students who are able to participate at a time when they are not overwhelmed with their school activities, and also helps us to avoid snow season, which like last year, it could have been a really big problem.
It was a major issue for a lot of people.
Yeah, we just have to at this time of year watch out for hurricanes. And our yearly major performance is performed with complete, really colorful costumes and scenery, and we're accompanied by a professional orchestra from 21 to 25 players. We're one of the few groups that can still boast using the original Sullivan scoring. Many of the other Gilbert and Sullivan groups have switched to using reduced scorings so to save money, but we feel it's worth the extra expense to get the genuine sound that Sullivan envisioned, and his woodwind scoring is particularly wonderful. This year, we have something new. We are hoping to introduce super titles to accompany our performance. Since many of the lyrics are quite rapid, we hope this will increase the enjoyment of those in the audience, and especially those who, like myself, might be a little bit hearing impaired. So we hope that this is going to add.
Excellent. Well, why don't we get to, before we run out of time in this segment, why don't we get to a piece of music from this production, and then we'll come back and talk more about it. What's this first piece you have for us?
Okay, this is the opening of the show, which opens on a pastoral field where there's a group of fairies hovering around, and this is the opening women's chorus.
We'll listen to that, then take a short break and be back with more.
Tripping hither, tripping thither, noble Tina, swine or wither.
We are back on Conducting Conversations. I'm Mike Mano, sitting with John Dreslin, the music director of the Connecticut Gilbert and Sullivan Society. And John, why don't we pick up where we left off, talking about the production.
Okay, a little background on Iolanthe. It was the seventh collaboration by Gilbert and Sullivan. Interestingly, the first one, Thespis, was lost as a result of fire in a warehouse where it was being stored. But Iolanthe was first performed at London's Savoy Theatre on November 25th, 1882. An interesting fact is that this theatre had just been converted to become the first in the world to be illuminated entirely by electric light. And this new sensation was actually capitalized on by having the crowns of the ladies in the opening chorus that we just heard illuminated with little electric light bulbs in their crowns.
I don't know if I would want to volunteer for that.
Well, we're continuing with that tradition. At our opening, the fairies will have illuminated crowns on their heads. So here they are. They're gathered in this field. And what happens now, as the story develops, is we learn that one of the fairies' number, Iolanthe, has been punished and sent to exile for marrying a mortal several years before the action started. And the result of this marriage was that she gave birth, unknown to the mortal father, of a son, Strephon, who is now a shepherd residing nearby. Because of his unusual parentage, Strephon is a fairy down to the waist and human below. Some of the difficulties this causes are that he can only make his upper half invisible, and his lower half still remains visible. And his upper half, being a fairy, fairies are immortal, never ages. His lower half grows older every day and someday must die. He laments that what's become of his upper half when he's buried his lower half, he really can't say. Also, the two halves of his body belong to different political parties. It would be like having an upper half that's a Republican and a lower half that's a Democrat. The fairies are really enchanted by this occurrence and beg their queen to pardon Iolanthe, which she agrees to, providing Iolanthe never reveal her continued existence or that of her son to his mortal father. Strephon, meanwhile, is engaged to be married to a young shepherdess, Phyllis, who knows nothing about his unusual parentage, knows nothing of his fairyhood. Being an orphan, she's a ward of the Court of Chancery and is so breathtakingly beautiful that the entirety of Britain's House of Lords, including the Lord Chancellor himself, have fallen madly in love with her. And in a stunning scene, they march in full regalia into her field to propose marriage.
Thank you.
John, we have time for one more piece in this segment. What happens next?
Well, all the House of Lords has gathered, but Phyllis will have nothing to do with them, and she declares that she's going to be true to her love, Strephon. Unfortunately, as a ward of the Court of Chancery, she's forbidden to proceed with the marriage under the threat that Strephon will be sent to prison if he disobeys. So in despair, Strephon summons his mother for advice. Unfortunately, Phyllis spies them. Now, you must remember that fairies never age, unless they choose to. So Iolanthe has the appearance of a 17-year-old. Phyllis flies into a rage and denounces Strephon as a cheat. She resolves that she will marry a rich lord. She doesn't care which one. Strephon calls upon the fairies for aid, and in the wild finale to Act One, the fairies retaliate by making Strephon a member of Parliament with the ability to force it to vote just as he likes. And we've now listened to the very end of the Act One finale.
We'll listen to that and then take a short break and be back with more.
Henceforth Strephon cast away crooks and pipes and ribbons so gay, flocks and herds at peat and low. Into Parliament you shall go.
Into Parliament he shall go. And by the supreme authority he'll come of the large majority. Into Parliament, into Parliament, Parliament, Parliament he shall go. Into Parliament he shall go. Into Parliament, into Parliament, Parliament, Parliament he shall go. Into Parliament he shall go.
In the parliamentary hive, liberal or conservative, Whig or Tory, I don't know, but into Parliament you shall go.
Into Parliament he shall go, backed by the supreme authority, he'll command a large majority. Into Parliament, T-A-R-I-M-E-N-T,
Parliament
he shall go, into Parliament he shall go.
Into Parliament, Parliament, Parliament he shall go, into Parliament he shall go.
Every bill and every measure that may gratify his pleasure, though your fury it arouses, shall be passed by both your houses. You shall sit, if he sees reason, through the grouse and salmon season.
No!
He shall end the cherished rights you enjoy on Friday nights.
No, no!
He shall prick that annual blister. Marriage with deceased wife's sister.
Mercy!
Titles shall ennoble then all the common councilmen.
Spare us!
Peers shall teem in Christendom, and a duke's exalted station be attainable by competitive examination!
Bye.
Welcome back to Conducting Conversations. I'm Mike Mano. Having a very pleasant evening listening and sitting and talking with John Dreslin, the music director of the Connecticut Gilbert and Sullivan Society. John, I'm going to ask you to pick up where you left off.
Okay, well, we move into Act Two outside the House of Parliament, where a lonely sentry is singing about how every child is born either a liberal or a conservative.
To chase monotony, he exercises all his brains, that is, assuming that he's got any. Though never nurtured in the lap of luxury, yet I admonish you, I am an intellectual chap, and think of things that would astonish you. I often think it's comical, fa-la-la, how nature always does contrive, fa-la-la, that every boy and every gal that's born into the world alive is either a little liberal or else a little conservative. Fa-la-la, fa-la-la, is either a little liberal or else a little conservative. Fa-la-la. If they've a brain and cerebellum too, they've got to leave that brain outside and vote just as their leaders tell them to. But then the prospect of a lot of dull MPs in close proximity, all thinking for themselves, is what no man can face with equanimity. Then let's rejoice with loud fa-la, fa-la-la, fa-la-la, that nature always does contrive, fa-la-la-la, that every boy and every gal that's born into the world alive is either a little liberal or else a little conservative. Fa-la-la, fa-la-la, is either a little liberal or else a little conservative. Fa-la-la.
And the story continues.
Yes, at this point, things are really getting out of hand. Strephon has now thrown Parliament in complete confusion. Another thing that's happening is all the fairies are gradually falling in love with members of the House of Peers, and of course, they can't marry under sentence of death if they should. And the Lord Chancellor himself can no longer sleep because he's so in love with Phyllis that he is just having nightmares all the time. And this leads to one of Gilbert and Sullivan's most famous patter songs called the Nightmare Song, Love Unrequited Robs Me of My Rest. And lots of lyrics in this one.
Love love unrequited robs me of my rest. Love, hopeless love, my ardent soul encumbers. Love, nightmare-like, lies heavy on my chest. And weaves itself into my midnight slumbers. When you're lying awake with a dismal headache and reposes to boo by anxiety, I conceive you may use any language you choose to indulge in without impropriety. For your brain is on fire, the bedclothes conspire of usual slumber to plunder you. First your counterpane goes and then covers your toes, and your sheet slips demurely from under you. Then the blanketing tickles, you feel like mixed pickles, so terribly sharp is the pricking. And you're hot and you're cross and you tumble and toss till there's nothing twixt you and the ticking. Then the bedclothes all creak to the ground in a heap and you pick them all up in a tangle. Next your pillow resigns and politely declines to remain at its usual angle. Well, you get some repose in the form of a doze with hot eyeballs and head ever aching. But your slumbering teems with such horrible dream that you'd very much better be waking. For you dream you are crossing the channel and tossing about in a steamer from Harwich, which is something between a large bathing machine and a very small second-class carriage. And you're giving a treat, penning ice and cold meat to a party of friends and relations. They're a ravenous horde and they all came on board at Stone Square and South Kensington stations. And bound on that journey, you find your attorney who started that morning from Devon. He's a bit undersized, and you don't feel surprised when he tells you he's only 11. Well, you're driving like mad with this singular lad. By the by, the ship's now a four-wheeler. And you're playing rum games, and he calls you bad names when you tell him the ties play the dealer. But this you can't stand, so you throw up your hand and find you're as cold as an icicle. In your shirt and your sock, the black silk with no clocks, crossing Salisbury Plain on a bicycle. And he and the crew are on bicycles too, which is somehow or other invested in. And he's telling the tars all the parts and bars of a company he's interested in. It's a scheme of devices to get at low prices for goods from cough mixtures to cables, which tickle the sales by treating retailers as though they were all vegetables. You get a good spaceman to plant a small tradesman, first take off his boots with a boot tree, and his legs will take root and his fingers will shoot and then blossom and bud like a fruit tree. From the green grocery tree you get grapes and green pea, cauliflower, pineapples and cranberries, while the pastry cook plant cherry brandy will plant apple puffs and three corners and banberries. The shares are a penny and ever so many are taken by Rothschild and Baring, and just as a few were allotted to you, you awake with a shudder despairing. You're a regular wreck with a crick in your neck and a wondrous snarl for your head's on the floor, and your needles have been from your soul to your shins, and your flesh is a creep for your left leg to sleep, and you cramping your toes and a fly in your nose, and a fluff in your lung and a feverish tongue, and a thirst that's intense and a general sense that you haven't been sleeping in clover. But the darkness has passed, and it's daylight at last, and the night has been long, it's a little nicer. And thank goodness they're both of them.
Well, John, we're almost out of time. You've done a great job, a great synopsis of the show, but a little bit more to go. So I think if people want to find the rest of the story, they're going to have to show up on October 3rd, 2 o'clock or 7:30, or October 4th at 2 o'clock. You can tell them how to get tickets for that great event.
Okay, well, by phone, call the number 860-554-1256, or use our website, ctgands.org.
Right, and that's going to be at the Valley Regional High School, Deep River, Connecticut. The actual address is 256 Kelsey Hill Road. Get yourself out there, support this wonderful group, and find out what the amazing finish is going to be. We have one more piece of music, but before we hear that, I want to thank you for coming in, John. It's been a great pleasure meeting you and finding out a lot more than I ever knew about Gilbert and Sullivan.
Thank you, Mike.
Tell us about this last piece quickly.
Well, all the problems have been resolved, and everybody has become a fairy.
All right. It sounds good to me. And for the rest of you, we'll see you next week on Conducting Conversations.
Oh, sky, ever so high, pleasures come in endless series. We will arrange happy exchange. House of peers for house of peers, 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 peers. House of peers for house of peers. Up in the air, sky high, free from mortal chancery. I shall be surely happier for a such a susceptible chancellor.
Conducting Conversations was brought to you by Roberts Musical Instruments, using music and the arts to keep your child educated, entertained, and having fun. Roberts Musical Instruments is your key to musical success. Call 823-5459. That's 823-5459.